Hello and welcome to another episode of the Side by Side ATC podcast. I'm your host, Tom Haynes. And this week, it's going to be kind of a continuation of Thursday's episode. As more information comes out, just kind of giving you my take on it from my experience as a controller, my experience working in a tower very similar to Reagan National Tower, Dallas Love Tower, very similar operation as far as the airport's concerned and where the airport's located. And apparently, from what I'm hearing, very similar staffing type things going on. So I was going to spend most of my time today talking about staffing. It's become kind of a buzzword being talked about in many areas, but pardon me. I think what I'll do first is kind of go over some of what I heard from the NTSB's briefing on Saturday, February 1st. I haven't seen an NTSB briefing on Sunday. I was looking for one, but the only one I could find was from Saturday. So they gave a timeline for some of the transmissions from the tower to both aircraft, and you know, those are details that they're going to be able to get pretty close. As far as one of the first questions that reporters asked is, how common is it to have aircraft on two different frequencies? And they mentioned that PAT-25, the Black Hawk, was on the UHF frequency. Very common for military to be on a UHF frequency. The CRJ was on a VHF frequency. The military are pretty much the only ones that use UHF frequencies. And so it is common. It's even common for one controller to work multiple VHF frequencies. We do it all the time at the tower that I work at. We're either working clearance, delivery, and ground together, which means you have two different frequencies, or we could be working clearance, delivery, ground, and local together, which means you have three frequencies. Pardon me. So, and even at Fort Worth Center, we did that quite a bit. What's not discussed, the NTSB briefer, and he is very good, and he has been excellent. Obviously, has a lot of experience dealing with the media. But when he talked about staffing of the tower at the time it happened, there were five controllers. One local controller, one ground controller, a local assist controller, and then a supervisor and a supervisor in training. The question I have is, who was working clearance delivery? Now, DCA may have the very latest automated clearance delivery system, which could be an explanation for why there's no one listed as being working clearance delivery. And that would be, you know, in line with it being a Washington, D.C. airport. So that's one of the first things I thought of when I wrote down what he said as far as the staffing. The other thing to note about staffing is that is probably very, very, very normal. I know at Love, we would have a local controller, a ground controller, a clearance delivery controller, but you have to realize I was working at Love in the 90s, so we didn't have automated clearances. And then you'd have a supervisor. Okay, so you're talking four people in a tower. And when I was there, if it was during rush hour, either in the morning or the evening, we would have someone working the radar position. And that was it. So at most, five people in the tower cab. And so you have to understand when it comes to staffing, and especially at 8:45 at night, that is going to be the staffing. Now, they may get into how long they were on position, what the full complement of controllers was for the evening shift, which I can tell you it's probably, my guess is going to be anywhere from 7 to 9. And I think that as far as this incident is concerned, staffing is probably not going to be an issue. It might come into play, like I said, based on how long they had been plugged in on position and how long they had worked, how many hours they had worked on position that shift. But that time of night, it's going to be before controllers start coming in for the mid, and so these people have probably been there since anywhere from 1 o'clock, 1:30 to 2 or 2:30, and then, you know, maybe even a guy that came in at 3. There's no way of telling, but I'm sure the NTSB is going to get to that eventually, and it will be part of their report that they make. Aside from that, the altitude of the CRJ, that is interesting to me, since the tower's radar usually takes 4 or 5 seconds to update. It's interesting to me that the tower radar was showing a lower altitude than the jet. And there are several reasons that might happen. Number one, when any aircraft is assigned an altitude, let's just say 5,000, then the computer and the radar will show that aircraft level at 5,000, even if that aircraft is at 4,800 or 5,200. It can show level even if the aircraft is not technically level, and the pilots are going to say that they're level at 5,000. Now, we as controllers, if a pilot checks on at 5,000 and the altitude reads 4,700 or 5,300 or more than 5,300 or less than 4,700, we have to verify, and we have to tell them, restate what the altimeter is, because that messes up the altitude readout, and so on. And so, you know, they will get very detailed information from both cockpit voice recorders and flight data recorders about what was going on. The NTSB are amazingly good at what they do. The technicians they have, the professionals they have, are amazing at getting information from those digital recorders. So much so that if there's an incident anywhere in the world, the NTSB may help if it's needed, regardless of the country. And so I was discussing this with my wife today, and all the information is out there, all the information that's on the internet, all the information that you can have access to and is available. And I will say this, put quotes around the word information. Anytime you get quote unquote information from anyone that is not the NTSB talking live like they were, or the FBI talking live. Do not trust it. Any information that has been leaked from either the NTSB or the FBI, it's not real information. And I will tell you this, the NTSB is one of the few groups in the government that does not leak information. Almost, period. That is why the guy's doing press conferences so often. Even though they have very little information, they're very early. They are incredibly early in this investigation. And yet, how many press conferences have you seen? They're doing almost one a day, at least one a day. And that will probably continue because there is a lot of publicity about this. And there should be. There should be publicity about this. Anytime you have a mid-air collision, it's traumatic. And it's not just traumatic for the people involved. Of course it is. But it's traumatic for all of us. It's traumatic for all of us who fly commercially or in private jets. I and my family enjoy flying. I enjoy flying more than my family does, but they do it quite often. As a matter of fact, my daughters fly around more than I do now, but I've always enjoyed flying. I've always enjoyed, whether it's in the back or whether it was one of the times that I've gotten to ride in the cockpit as a controller on a familiarization flight. I've thoroughly enjoy flying. I have a family member in the military who is a pilot. And, of course, he loves flying. So, an incident like this affects all of us. And there's really, you know, I think that's why there are so many questions about it. Why it has become such a talking point. People want to know why it happened and how can we prevent it. I will say this, after 36 years in this field, I can tell you we can't prevent it. We can't prevent all incidents from happening. People make mistakes. Pilots make mistakes. Controllers make mistakes. It happens. And if you think AI is going to be the salvation for that and keep it from ever happening, no, it's not. At this point, AI can't respond to the millions of bits of data that are going into and being processed by the pilot's brain and by the controller's brain and adapting and using their experience to figure out how to resolve this moving three-dimensional puzzle that is our air traffic and our national airspace system. So we may never get to the point where we can completely do away with incidents like this, but I can guarantee you the NTSB will recommend several things that I've already seen from this incident. And I am about 90% sure that those helicopter routes are going to be moved. And if there are any helicopter routes that are similar that are close to fairly big airports, they're going to be moved. I think that's the very least we can do. And it's not an easy solution because it takes time to develop those routes and make them safe. Well, obviously, at some point, this one was not safe. So, that's, I think, one of the first things that's going to come out is going to be that these helicopter routes are going to end up being moved. Now, how many of them will be moved? Who knows? There's no way to know how many there are nationwide. But I can tell you, there are a lot of helicopters flying around. A lot of medical helicopters. A lot of private helicopters going to and from events. I mean, in the DFW area where I am, oh my, you would be incredibly surprised at how many helicopters there are flying around at any time, day and night. It's you know, it's just something that is being used, and it's being used for good. They transport patients. They transport organs. They are there for a reason, and they're needed. So getting rid of helicopters, that's not an option. Getting rid of helicopters at night, not an option. It's just not. Pardon me. Like I said, can we do better about ensuring helicopters and aircraft, airplanes, are not as close together as in some instances? Maybe. It's such a convoluted problem. It's such a complex three-dimensional puzzle that they're trying to solve. And so it's just gonna hopefully we can make some changes that'll be real changes, be substantial changes, but we can't foresee everything. And so what's going to be the next thing that needs to be changed? And unfortunately, the FAA, the powers that be, it's difficult to foresee what you need to change. That's why so often these changes only come about when something tragic happens. Because it's so difficult to see that some things need to be changed. And that's the way it's always been. That's the way it's been since they started flying passengers around. Is you don't know what needs to be changed until something happens. And then you go, well, that should have been something that we did see, but we didn't. We thought we were safe. We thought we were doing what we needed to do to ensure everybody's safety. And then we find out that we weren't. I don't know how you can change that. To be quite honest, I don't know how you can change that. So that's about the information that I saw. I didn't watch the entire briefing. I didn't want to sit through all the media question and answer. But getting back to one of the things that was being talked about and has been talked about was staffing. Why was staffing so low? Why was there only one person talking to both those aircraft on different frequencies? It happens. Like I said earlier, looking at the staffing that was there, with clearance delivery being automated, that's the staffing that they're going to have. That's the staffing that they're going to have all day. Unless there's just an enormous amount of helicopter traffic, they're not going to have a person working just that traffic. It's just not going to happen. Like I said, at Love, we used to split off the radar position during rush hours. Well, and then Love got to the point for several years where they tried to staff that position 24/7, even on a mid shift. Well, there was no way they had the staffing for it. Supervisor got the quote-unquote brilliant idea that maybe if they did that, they would get more staffing to staff the extra position. Well, I don't think that worked. And now, Love, from what I've heard, very rarely staffs the radar position. And the tower that I work at now is very close to their airspace. And I see their airspace. There's a lot of helicopter traffic. There's a lot of tour traffic that, you know, people in a small airplane, they want to fly around downtown Dallas. They want to take a look at the sights. They want to take pictures. Well, it's all well and good. But you do have a fairly busy airport right there just north of downtown with aircraft taking off and landing. And so the tour aircraft, they have a specific route for them. And I will say this, not everyone knows that flies that route knows exactly what the route is. But that's a different discussion. But as far as staffing goes, the staffing in the tower was adequate. And they could have had, you know, five people on break for all I know, but they wouldn't have increased the number of controllers in the tower cab working. That's just my take. Now, as the overall general issue about staffing in the FAA, yes, it is a problem. It's a problem in the federal contract towers. They can't get people to work for them. Now, the federal contract towers and the smaller towers in the FAA, they're just not paid enough. I'll just say it. Plain and simple. They're not paid enough. Now, when I was working at Fort Center, and even at Love, back in the mid-90s, I was making very decent money. I went to Fort Center because I felt like I needed to make more. And then President Clinton gave us a nice big raise and ended up making quite a bit more. But those pay bands have been changed over the years. And there are controllers working towers that are not making what they should be making. Just like there are teachers that are not making what they should be making. There are policemen and firemen who are not making what they should be making. These are some of the most important jobs in the world. And we don't pay them like they're the important jobs in the world. We pay pilots 3 and 4 times what we pay a controller. And I got to tell you, I think pilots earn every penny. But I think controllers should get paid as much, because the pilots in charge of one airplane, maybe anywhere from 60 to 300 people on board, the controllers in charge of 20 to 30 of those airplanes. And so until we decide that we're going to pay what people deserve to be paid, and this goes for teachers, firemen, policemen, you name it, until we're ready to pay them what they deserve to be paid, we will have staffing shortages. We will have schools that don't have teachers. We will have fire departments that don't have firemen, police departments that can't staff police. And yes, we will have a national airspace system that cannot staff air traffic controllers. It's just going to continue. So that's my 2 cents As more information comes out on this tragedy, I may come back to it and discuss it. If you guys have questions that you want to ask me, then by all means, email me, TomHaines@sidebysideATC.com. I read each one of them. I'll get back to you as soon as I can with an answer. And if it's an answer that I think a lot of people need to hear, then it'll become a podcast. That's the way we do things. But I do want to thank you all so much. I know I got a bunch of new listeners, since Thursday with that podcast. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for your encouragement about the podcast and about the information. Just continue to hang in there. If you're flying soon, hang in there. 2009 was the last, if I remember right, was the last crash. 16 years. And then, of course, we had another one with the Learjet in Pennsylvania. There are incidents all around the country. I think in the last week where I'm at, we've had two emergencies. And so it happens. It happens. Fortunately, it does not happen that often. And even more fortunate, usually it doesn't involve loss of life. But this time it did. And so, again, my encouragement goes out to all of you who have made the decision to try and become air traffic controllers. Again, I think it's the best career, the best job you could possibly get into. Period. But hang in there. There's a lot of attention on air traffic control right now, and that's normal. But hang in there. If you're at the academy, hang in there. If you're going to the academy, then I have a couple of episodes that you may want to look at as far as preparing for it. But thank you all again for listening, for continuing to listen to me, for continuing to listen to me give you my opinions on a wide range of stuff. And hopefully, I won't put out another one on Thursday. Hopefully, there won't be a need. If a lot of information comes out about the crash, I will do another one on Thursday. But hopefully, we'll see you, and I'll talk to you again in a week on Monday. And until then, again, thank you so much for listening. And I hope you guys have a great week. Goodbye.